Baruchim Habayim, welcome everyone to tape number 23 in a series of 1,000 on living with your teenager. This evening's talk is going to be entitled Setting the Example Number 2. We're going to discuss that very important topic of how parents can set an effective example for their children. An example that will have impact on the behavior of their children. An example that their children will be impressed with and learn from. And we are going to take an example from the Chacham Mikol Adam, Shlomo HaMelech. There's a story in Sefer Melachim Aleph where HaKadosh Baruch Hu asks Shlomo HaMelech what he wants in this world. Hashem says to Shlomo HaMelech that he will grant him one wish. And Shlomo HaMelech says that he would like a leiv shomea lishpoit es amcho lahovin bein toiv l'ra. He wants an understanding mind, a mind that listens, a mind that's able to judge Klal Yisrael, to understand the difference between right and wrong. Kimi yuchal lishpoit es amcho hakoveid hazeh. Because who in this world is capable of judging Klal Yisrael properly? In other words, Shlomo HaMelech is asking Hashem to grant him the wisdom to know the difference between right and wrong. And, as we know, Hashem answered Shlomo HaMelech. But the Pasuk gives us a reason why Shlomo HaMelech was answered. And the Pasuk states as follows. Vayomer Elokim Elov, and Hashem said to him, Yaan asher sha'alto es hadavar hazeh, because you requested this thing, meaning because you requested wisdom. Veloy sha'alto lecha yomim ravim, and you didn't ask for long days on this earth. You didn't ask for a long life. Veloy sha'alto lecha oisher, and you didn't ask for riches. Veloy sha'alto nefesh oivecha, and you didn't ask for the destruction of your enemies. V'sha'alto lecha hovin l'shmoya mishpat. Rather, you asked to understand and be able to judge. Hine asisi kidvarecha. Therefore, behold, I'm doing as you requested. Hine nosati lecha leiv chochom v'novoin. Asher kamoicha lo yhoyo lefonecha, v'yacharecha lo yokum kamoicha. I'm giving you a wise mind and a wise heart, greater than anybody that ever was, and anyone that ever will be. Now Hashem did not just state that he's answering Shlomo HaMelech because he's happy with Shlomo HaMelech's choice of requesting wisdom. The Pasuk doesn't just say, Yaan asher sha'alto es hadavar hazeh, therefore I'm giving it to you. Hashem says, because you chose this thing, and you did not choose arichas yomim, and you did not choose money, and you did not choose the destruction of your enemies. Which means that Hashem is saying, I am answering you, Shlomo HaMelech, because you abandoned all the other options, all the other things you could have asked for in favor of Chochmah. Asking for Chochmah was not good enough. Shlomo HaMelech had to ask for Chochmah as opposed to anything else. Shlomo HaMelech, to him, Chochmah was so valuable. It was not just something he requested. It was more valuable than anything else in the world. That's what Hashem is saying. Because Chochmah is more valuable to you than Arichas Yomim. Because Chochmah is more valuable to you than money. Because Chochmah is more valuable to you than the destruction of your enemies. Because Chochmah is so valuable to you, therefore I'm giving you Chochmah. Shlomo HaMelech, in order to be answered, had to abandon, throw away, discard everything in the world in favor of wisdom. And therefore Hashem answered him. When we ask for wisdom for our children, for bonim talmidei chachamim, when we ask for wisdom for ourselves, when we try to pursue the acquisition and the attainment of Torah knowledge, it's not enough to just pursue Torah knowledge. In order to attain it, we have to sacrifice anything that gets in our way, any obstacles, any other choices, any options that we may have besides Torah knowledge must get dropped by the wayside. We must sacrifice for our Torah knowledge. Pursuing it comfortably is not enough. Now, with this pasuk, I was able to figure out something that was for a long time one of the great mysteries to me in the davening for Yomim Hanoiroyim. In the Kedusha, Yomim Hanoiroyim, when the Shliach Tzibur says the word Ayeh, in the Machzorim you will find a little asterisk by Ayeh, which directs you to the bottom of the page where you will find three small prayers. Each prayer is for a different thing. And when the Chazan is saying that word Ayeh, it's an Eis Ratzon. You have an opportunity to pray one of those three prayers, but you can only choose one. First of the three is for money. Second is for Ruach HaKodesh, for wisdom. The third is for Bonim, Kisherim, good Torah-dikah children. Those are three choices. But we can only pray for one of them. And it's up to us to choose then which one we want. Now, I always wondered, why is it that lumped together in the same multiple choice option with Ruach HaKodesh and Bonim Ksherim V'Tzadikim is money? It seems somewhat unbalanced that we should have a choice between two of the most lofty dreams that anyone can have and money. Now, Parnos is an important thing, and it's a legitimate tefillah. But there are so many others also. There's a refuah shleima for all cholim. There's so many things we could pray for. Money just seems so out of place next to the other two prayers. So why in the world do we have these three choices? What is money doing there? Who in the world is going to choose that over the other two anyway? Do you know what the answer is? Just like Shlomo HaMelech, when he prayed to Hashem, when he asked Hashem to give him wisdom, it wasn't enough that he asked for wisdom. It wasn't enough, Sha'alto Chochmo, it wasn't enough that you, Sha'alto Dover Hazeh, but rather, he had to abandon other options. Loi Sha'alto Nefesh Avecha, Loi Sha'alto Oisher. So too by us. It's not enough just to ask for Hashem for wisdom for us, or wisdom for our children. If the only options would be, the only choices would be to pray for Ruach HaKodesh or for Bonim Ksherim, that would be good, Sha'alto Dover Hazeh. But where would be the loishal to as nefesh ovecha? Where would be the loishal to oisher? Where would be the loishal to arichas yomim? That wouldn't be there. And if that's the only reason, that's what got Shlomo HaMelech answered when he asked for his chokhmah, we can't expect more. And therefore, the Baal HaTfilah, the author of those three prayers, never intended for you to ask for money. But money has to be an option in order for you to discard it in favor of the other two, in favor of chokhmah. In order to include a component of loisha al to oisher, we had to have that option. And therefore, we must understand that not only to make an impact on HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Kaviyachol, it is necessary, it is a requisite to abandon, to discard other options in favor of Torah, in favor of Chochmah, but also in order to make an impact on our children, it is necessary not only to pursue Torah knowledge and mitzvahs, but it is imperative that our children see that Torah and mitzvahs are more important to us than anything else in the world. They must see us sacrifice for Torah. They must see us give up other options in favor of Torah. They must see us choose Torah over other possible attainments that we could pursue. Torah has to be not only good to us, but it's toiv me alfei zohov v'kesef. It's greater than money. Torah has to be not only sweet, mosuk midvash, but sweeter than honey. Torah has to be not only valuable, but v'rochoik mipninim michro, more valuable than pearls. In today's day and age, it's hard to find somebody that sacrifices for anything. Although we live in the age of the curious dichotomy, that paradox between hard work, struggling to make a living of parnasa just to make ends meet, struggling to find time to be with our family, together with living in the lap of luxury. We run around like chickens without heads, and we're so... it's so easy compared to the older, ancient generations. The curse of Odom Harishon, Bezeyas Apecha Toich Alechem, has certainly not terminated, and that's a curse that lasts forever, lasts until doomsday. And so, by the sweat of our brow, we work. But despite all the work, despite all the effort, what do we really sacrifice for our values? When we go to work in the morning, we snap in a Torah tape into the car's cassette player. On the way back, we do it again, or we flip it over to the other side. At home, we punch in a couple of buttons on the phone and we have a daf yomi shir. Or, we can choose from the many shiurim that are available to us in our neighborhoods on any given topic at almost any given time. And this is all wonderful. This is all great. Baruch Hashem! But it's not enough to show our children how much we value Torah. Our children have to see us sacrifice. They have to see us willingly, knowingly, gladly, and happily give up other stuff for learning. We can't just present a picture of parents to our children, parents who value the mundane necessities and materialistic goals that we pursue every day. And in our spare time, when we have some leisure left, instead of playing tennis, or instead of listening to the radio, we'll listen to Torah. Again, that's great. If that's what you do in your spare time, it's much better than playing tennis or listening to the radio. But we want to make an impact on our children. And this doesn't make much of an impact. Oh yes, the father that doesn't go to the shir, the father that doesn't pursue Torah, that makes an impact on a child, unfortunately. A very strong negative impact. But if you want to make a positive impact, your child has to see not only Sha'alto Dover Hazer, that you ask, you want Torah, but Loi Sha'alto Oisha, Loi Sha'alto Nefesh Aivecha, and Loi Sha'alto Arichas Yamin. There are many ways we as parents are able to demonstrate to our children our sacrifice, how far we're willing to go for Torah. That's not the subject of this evening's shiur, the details of how to do it, because I think everyone in the audience understands that if you say you're too tired to learn, if you have other hobbies, other pursuits, other interests that could be sacrificed for learning but aren't, then that's exactly what we're talking about. In today's world, our children have to see not only pursuit of Torah, but the discarding of everything else. Now, there are two reasons for this. Reason number one is because that's the only way you're going to make an impact on your children. Reason number two is because part of the example we must set for our children is the example that gives a message which states that the values that we find on the streets are empty. It's two different things. In the prayer of Rabbi Nechunya ben Hakono, he says, Anu amelim vehem amelim. Anu amelim l'divrei Torah vehem amelim l'dvarim b'talim. We work and they work. We work for divrei Torah and they work for worthless things. We wake up and they work up. We wake up to serve Hashem and they wake up for nothingness. Baruch Hashem, thank you Hashem. Shesamta chelki miyoshvei beis hamedrash v'loi miyoshvei hakronois. That you put my lot in the beis hamedrash and not hanging around on the street corners. Question. Why did Reb Nechunya have to say V'loi miyoshvei kronois? Shesamta chelki miyoshvei beis hamedrash. Thank you Hashem for making me one of those people that sit and learn in the beis hamedrash. Why does he have to say, you made me, this is what you made me do, as opposed to something else? You think HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't know what it means, Yoishvei Beis HaMedrash, that Reb Nechunya ben Hakona has to explain himself through a contrast? Thank you Hashem. Imagine in benching, thank you Hashem for giving me food as opposed to making me starve. It's unnecessary and superfluous. The answer is given by the Satmar Rebbe Zecher Tzadik Lebracha. He says that there are certain people that learn in a Beis Medrash. Oh, they value learning. And they pursue it as well. But not exclusively. They also value those things that the Yoishvei Kronois value. You find them in the Beis Medrash in the morning, or in the Beis Medrash in the evening, and the afternoon on a street corner. Those people you find in the evening by the Daf Yomi Shir, what were they doing a whole day? You can be from the Yoshvei Beis HaMedrash and from the Yoshvei Kronos. And it doesn't matter if you stand on the street corner or the street corner stands in your heart. The Ramban says in Masechta Erevin that the reasoning, the rationale behind an Erev Tchumen, where you place your Suda, your meal, on the road somewhere, and that shifts the center of your Tchum Shabbos, is because wherever a person's Suda, wherever his food is, that's where his mind is. That's where his heart is. And where his mind is, that's considered where he lives. That's his dira. That's where he is. You're sitting in your chair? No. If your mind is wandering, your body is in your chair. You are wherever your mind is. This, the Ramban says, if you hold to chumen d'oraisa, this is how it works. If it's drabanon chumen, sahem omru vahem omru. The Rabbanon can do what they want. But this svara, the Ramban says, is necessary and sufficient to permit an Isser Dairaisa. Now wherever your mind is, that's where you are. There's Gemara like this in Brachos Daf Yud. The Gemara over there says that David HaMelech was Dor, he lived in 10 worlds. One of the worlds, it says, he was his takel b'mapalosan shel rishoyim v'yomar shira. He looked, he thought about the downfall of the wicked people, and he said, Shira Tashem, and that's where he lived. So strange thing. What do you mean that's where he lived? It says he lived in his mother's womb. It says he lived over here, he lived over there. Those are places where he lives. But what do you mean? His takabam apalosan shel rishoyim? How is that living somewhere? The answer is with the Ramban. If that's where your mind is, that's where you're living. And so, you could be in a Beis Medrash and really be on the street corner also. You can be during the day in your office, but you could be on the street corner. In order to be Meyoshvei Beis HaMedrash, we have to make sure that our heart and our mind, our values, are not on the street corners. And this is such an important lesson that we have to instill within our children, because there is presented to them, served up to them in a silver platter, a total and complete value system, an entire world philosophy and outlook just waiting for them out there. The rejection of that world outlook is so important in our children's success as B'nai Torah. And if we want them to reject that value system, we have to set an example by rejecting it as well. And how do we reject it? I'm not talking about Averis and Dvarim Asurim. I'm talking about the materialism. I'm talking about the so-called Koshera values. A child can get so swept up in them that that becomes their primary goal in life. We have to show them that we reject it in favor of Torah. We have to show them that we sacrifice opportunities for Oysher, for Arichas Yomim, for Kavod, in order to learn Torah. How lucky is a child whose father gets an offer from the company he works for to relocate to some hick town in the middle of nowhere at double the salary he's making now. And the father says no Because although they need the money, and although it's an offer that normally would be considered one that you cannot refuse, he will not move out of a neighborhood of B'nai Torah to relocate to a neighborhood that is less than that. Echoes of Rabbi Yossi Bar Kisma in Pirkei Avos. How lucky is that child? Because he sees his father not only learning Torah, maybe the father will learn the same amount somewhere in the Galilois of Kalamazoo. But if a father is willing to sacrifice some money, a chosh of a position, to be in an environment of Torah, then how lucky is that child who's able to see that? If you don't have anything to sacrifice, find something. It's always there. It's worth working hard to get that promotion just to be able to refuse it. And to show your children, because that's lesson, that piece of education that you give your children is worth more than the promotion itself. How lucky is the child whose father is kaveya itim with him, who makes up a seder to learn with his son, and through thick and thin, if he has to come home early from his friend's chasana, if he has to miss an important appointment, through Eish and through Mayim, he makes sure that his son's learning is not missed. That's sacrifice. That's Loisha al Ta'isha. The whole point of being a Chochem, well, one of the major components, rather, of being a Chochem, is valuing wisdom more than anything else. You know what the Rambam says? The Rambam says in Hilchos Reitzeach that to a Talmud Chacham, to somebody that is learned, to a wise man, living a life without Torah, without wisdom, is like death. And therefore, if a student has to go out into exile for killing somebody b'shoigeg as per the halacha, one of the biological necessities that we provide him with is his Rebbe. The Rebbe has to go into exile with him, because the Rambam says it's a biological necessity to somebody who pursues Chochmah. And that's the impression we have to give to our children, that Torah to us is not only a good thing, it's a biological necessity. And the way to show that is by sacrificing everything else, whatever's needed in order to be able to pursue Torah wisdom. Now it's a hard, it's a and tall order that we're setting forth here. But Rabbeisai, the prize is well worth the investment. How your children will respect you, how your children will love you when they see how you value good in such an honest way, in such a real way. If children are repulsed by hypocrisy more than anything else, they are attracted to honesty and truth, to something that's real more than anything else. If you give your son by the Shabbos table a Dvar Torah about how important Torah is, and then he sees you coming late to your Seder because you are busy schmoozing a juicy piece of Lashon Hara, then your real set of values is revealed. Children love parents that are real, that are clear, that are black and white, that are in focus, and they respect that self-sacrifice. And if you are willing, ready and able to sacrifice for your values, for the right values, you will be able to instill within your children that ability as well. And this is valuable for all children. Even the straight Aleph students, even the biggest Masmidim. It's such a valuable lesson. But for children who are at risk, children whose Yiras Shamayim is somewhat more fragile than average, this is invaluable. The ability to give up pleasure, things that you enjoy, for your values is exactly, precisely what that child needs. And the best way to instill this ability in him is to make him grow up in an environment where it is a given. And that means setting an example. Now, of course, one word of caution has to be inserted at this point. When Shlomo HaMelech asked for Chochmah, as opposed to the other things that he could have asked for, do you think he did so painfully or reluctantly or in a kvetching way out of a sense of duty? Or rather, to Shlomo HaMelech, this wisdom was more valuable than anything else. You see, we say sacrifice, but the truth of the matter is, it's not a sacrifice. You see, if you value the item that you are giving up more than the item that you are getting, but you need to get that item because it's right, then that's a sacrifice. If the man who's offered the position in Kalamazoo values money and prestige more than his Torah environment, then it's a sacrifice to give that up for the sake of doing what's right. And that speaks well for him if he's willing to do that. But that's not the midah that we're trying to describe here. Because if he values the Torah environment, if it's really worth so much to him, more than that position, then it's not a sacrifice. Do you think Shlomo HaMelech sacrificed anything when he asked for wisdom? He abandoned other things. He refrained from asking for other things. But sacrifice? When you find that you're holding in your hand that winning lottery ticket, and you have one more day to cash it in, and nebuch, you have to wake up early and go out in the cold to go down to the lottery center and receive your $3 million. Rachmanis on you. You sacrificed. You woke up early in the morning and you went out in the cold to cash in your ticket. Would anybody in their right mind consider that a sacrifice? Not a sacrifice. It's a question of what's worth more to you. And so, if a father has to wake up early in the morning and go out in the snow in order to daven with a minyan, or in order to learn with his Rebbe, we're not saying that what should be presented to the child is that, oh, look how much I sacrifice for learning. No! Remember, that's no good. It's Shver Tzayin Ayid syndrome that Rav Moshe Feinstein said is poison for children. Shver Tzayin Ayid. It's Shver to be a lottery winner. Because you know what you have to do? You got to go down, you got to cash your ticket. May have to wake up early in the morning. I can't think offhand of any other problem. But when you balance the prize against the investment, against what we're calling the sacrifice, it's not a sacrifice at all. We're talking about a value system. We're talking about a system where you value Torah more than anything else. If a bachur in yeshiva decides to pursue a career in learning, as opposed to a career as a well-to-do businessman or professional, well, maybe he considers it as if he's sacrificing a life of luxury for learning, and if that's how he considers it, then he gets credit for that sacrifice. But if he really understood what was flying, if he really had an insight into what was happening, he wouldn't consider it a sacrifice. Not at all. It's a sacrifice to be able to pursue a career in learning. A sacrifice. The prize is so valuable. What are you sacrificing? You know what the Mishnah says in Pirkei Avos? There's a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. Most people only know half of it. Kachi Darko Shel Torah. The following, the Mishnah says, is the way of the Torah. Pas b'melach toichel maimim shum tishteh. You eat bread and water. And you eat bread and salt, and you drink putrid water. Al ha'aretz tishon, you sleep on the ground. U'b'toira ta'amel, and you work hard learning. So now, you would think that what the Mishnah is talking about is sacrificing this world in exchange for the next world. And that would be good, to sacrifice this world in exchange for the next world. But you know what the Mishnah says? The Mishnah continues, and it says it's not so. Ashrecha v'toiv loch. Ashrecha v'oilom hazeh. V'toiv loch v'oilom habo. It says, fortunate are you in this world, and it's going to be good for you in the next world. That has to be our attitude. The guy that's sitting, learning Torah, while eating bread and salt, drinking putrid water, sleeping on the ground, and learning Torah, you know what his attitude is? That rich man in the estate in Scarsdale, it's Rachmanis on him. Because he's not learning Torah. It's Rachmanis on him. That's what our attitude should be. That's what our children have to see. That anybody who's not a frum yid, we're not jealous of them. We don't consider our lives a sacrifice. Who's happier in this world than the Torah Jew? There's nobody happier in Olam Hazeh. What are we jealous, Rachmana Litzlan, of the movie stars in Hollywood whose suicide rate must be quadruple that of the average depressed person? Who are we to be jealous of? Who is there to be? I'm looking. Who is there to be jealous of? What in the world are we sacrificing? That's our attitude. Our attitude is we have it good. I should take a job in Michigan and lose this? They're trying to scam me. They're trying to use me. They're trying to put one pull the wool over my eyes. They're trying to schlep me out there? What are they, crazy? They think I'm going to give this up? What a fool you have to be to do that. See, we're not talking about the father saying, look, Kindalach, look what a hard life I am choosing in order to learn Torah, in order to remain in a Torah environment. No! Ah, they're trying to trick me. They're trying to take away my life. They're trying to take away my happiness. Because they need a CEO in Michigan. You have to be insane to accept the offer. Like somebody comes over to you and you're driving a Cadillac, brand new Cadillac, and somebody comes over to you. You look a little naive maybe to this guy and he says, I'll give you $20 for your car. and you live. You say, whoa, I'm sacrificing the $20 in order to keep my car. It's the same thing here. He's offering me money. He's offering me prestige. He's offering me a position. And he wants to take my Torah environment. Laugh in his face. You should laugh. It's a value system. Not sacrificing. If you value what you have, you don't need to sacrifice. Yes. Sacrificing is good. If your value system is still that of the materialistic world, then your idealism will overcome your materialism, perhaps, and that's called sacrifice. But we're not your own selfishness, your own interpretation of happiness, where you don't need any idealism. You need the right perspective. You need a right understanding. You don't need sacrifice. With that, you don't need sacrifice. If you have the right perspective, then even if you don't have great self-control or self-discipline, you'll make the right choices because you'll choose what's more valuable intrinsically. And so, although self-discipline and self-control is a very good midah to have, but that's not what we're talking about tonight. We're not talking about that type of sacrifice. What we're talking about is having the right perspective, the right value system, and that's what we want to impart in our children. We're not trying to impart to our children our own self-discipline, our own self-control. That's a different story. We're trying to impart to them our values, our perspective, what's important to us and what's unimportant. What decisions are silly and what decisions are smart. We're not telling them, give up a lot because this is what's right. Although that's true, it is right. We're telling them, Ivdu es Hashem b'simcha. We're telling them we're happy with what we have, not because we're sameach b'chelkoi, but because we are the richest people in the world. And that value system is what we're trying to impart into our children. Now we're going to take questions from the audience. We have the first question, and it goes as follows. Where do hobbies fit in? What about people who can't learn 24 hours a day and need an outlet? Absolutely. If you want, you can take a look in the Or Sameach in Hilchas Talmud Torah, if you must know. And there you will find a halacha that the obligation to learn Torah is different quantitatively for each individual. Nobody's obligated to do more than he can do, but two things. Number one, you have to employ much intellectual honesty in this, because as it is, for somebody without a lot of Yiras Shamayim and without a lot of ruthless objectivity, he has an excuse to learn as little as he wants. So honesty is a prerequisite to applying this halacha. And two, when he does his outlet activities, he has to understand that he's doing it in order to let loose whatever he needs in, so that later he can go back to his primary activity, which is learning. Even mitzvahs, the wording of the Rambam is, if there's a mitzvah that there's nobody else available to do, so you go to do the mitzvah, you close your sefer, you stop learning, you interrupt your learning, you go to do the mitzvah, and then the Rambam says, and after you finish the mitzvah, v'yachzor lelimudoy, you return to your learning. I heard once in the name of the Briska Rav that the reason why the Rambam said v'yachzor lelimudoy, that you return to your learning, even though it's obvious, if there's no mitzvah left, that's certainly what you're going to be doing, is because Your learning is your primary career. Everything else is an interruption. Even a mitzvah is an interruption. When he finishes the mitzvah, he returns to his learning with the attitude that that's his primary career. Even if you work 8 hours a day and learn 1 hour a day, you know what that means? That means your career is learning and you interrupt it for 8 hours a day. That's Tayrascha Keva Umalachtecha Aroi. The issue is not the hours, the issue is the attitude. You'll find a similar approach to that of the Or Sameach in the Tshuvas of Rav Yosef Chaim Sonnenfeld when he discusses card playing on Hanukkah. He also mentions this, that not everybody can learn 24 hours a day, and we accept that, again, within the framework of honesty. There are many people out there who can learn a lot more than they claim, but we do accept the fact that different people have different capabilities, and the same person may have different capabilities at different times during his life. So that's the job and attitude we have towards hobbies. Question: changing attitudes. If we may transfer the domain from the home to the school, how can we adjust or change the attitudes of the following two Jewish students, parentheses, veritable victims of the Golos mind? The following are episodes of their deviant religious behavior. Case A might say, oh, are we reading something about Jewish interest again? We have already had 2 hours of the same thing. Case B, very soon after he put on his tzitzis, he takes them off, folds it, and puts it in his pocket. How do we handle A and B? We're talking about a school, right? Well, obviously, there are so many different reasons why a kid would fold up his tzitzis and put it in his pocket that it would depend on the reason. It could be peer pressure. It could be the kid is trying to prove something. Even in the school, there could be any number of reasons why he's doing that. Maybe he's ashamed of his tzitzis because the boys that he's associating with don't wear them. Maybe he's trying to give a message of rebelliousness. Could be any number of things. You know, it's like saying, how do we treat a person with a headache? Well, you take aspirin, right? No, that's not treating the headache, that's just treating the symptoms. This is a symptom of something. And the first one also, when a kid says, oh, we've already had 2 hours of the same thing. What you'd have to do is you'd have to find more information about the case than just that which is given on the paper. And that itself is an important point, that we shouldn't confuse the symptoms with the sickness. If, let's say, you could find a way to force this kid to wear tzitzis, the chances are, probably, that besides the mitzvah itself, and I don't mean to be facetious when I say that, you accomplish nothing. Because whatever caused a fine Jewish boy to take off his tzitzis is still there. Just that you are not allowing the symptom to show. And so it depends on the case. Next question. Why aren't the big organizations doing something about the problem of rebellious youth? Firstly, one of the reasons is because, and I can't say all the big organizations, I try very hard not to make sweeping generalities. Non-sweeping generalities is okay. But to talk about all of them in terms of every single big organization, I can't say that. But the truth is, there is definitely a disproportionately small response on the part of those who are in a position to do something about the problem compared to the problem itself. And there are a number of reasons for this. Reason number one is because to a great degree there are large segments of Klal Yisrael that still want to take the problem and shove it under the rug. To take their head and hide it in the ostrich's hole and hear no evil and see no evil. There are those who will say that you're an alarmist. There are those that'll say that you're being negative. There are those that'll say that you're overreacting or exaggerating. There are those that'll say it's not Klal Yisrael's problem. It's a problem of some individual parents. Anybody with any organization with a political orientation is going to have to sacrifice, and here I mean real sacrifice, in order to be able to properly respond to this problem. Now I want you to know that the great Gedolim and Rosh HaYeshiva and Rabbonim are not naive as to what's going on. They know full well and they are trying their best. The question certainly doesn't apply to them. They are trying their best. And they are doing what they can. Just as 30 years ago, Klal Yisrael was not ready, well, much of Klal Yisrael was not ready to accept the problem of, let's say, learning disabled Jewish children and other social issues that are now considered accepted. So too, we are at the final frontier, probably, of our social issues. And one day, they're going to be accepting this the way the other problems were accepted. It just takes time. But if you want to do something about it, you make your voice heard. You tell them, do something about it. Why don't you do this and this? Now don't just go to somebody who you know, who's a vice president or a board member of some organization and say, why don't you do something? He'll tell you he does something. He'll tell you, look, we printed an article about this then, and we had somebody speak about this then. But all this is nothing. We're talking Rachel Bitcha Ketana action. That's what we're talking about. We're not talking about some throwing the problem a bone so that it should look as if something's happening. We're talking about doing something about the problem. We all know there's a big difference between writing an article or making a speech and writing the right article or making the right speech or doing the right thing about it. And that's the way it is. But again, you can do something about it. We all have a lot of influence, and we should be using it. Thank you all for coming. Have a good night.